Come.
Okay, 5:40 a.m. The Shaw. Hey, everybody, this is Joel Clayfish, raised in the Shaw, because I was raised in the Shaw. We've got Mark Kakich with us today, former state champion duck caller, incredibly involved in waterfowl management throughout the state of Wisconsin, and a fantastic hunter and a friend, a person I've been honored to share the field with. We left going to break talking about cooking, or at least if we weren't talking about cooking, I'm going to start talking about cooking. Too often I hear, oh, geese are gross, man. They are not. They're one of my favorite things to eat. But how do you like to prepare your wild game, your ducks, and your geese?
I hate to say this, but a guy that I know gave me a recipe that I probably had asked for three times, and I finally ended up having my wife call him.
Okay, he's talking about me. This is the second time in 2 weeks, by the way, a guest has made like this anonymous story, and it ended up about me being not returning a phone call or a text, by the way.
I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about Ted. So in all honesty, it is true that Joel probably has the best goose recipe. You know, goose and gravy, and then my wife made corned beef, only corned goose, ooh, I guess you could say.
That sounds unbelievable.
Oh, lights out, lights out.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get a hold of that.
Yeah.
With my high blood pressure, I can't eat salty stuff, though. Can you make the corned goose without as much salt in it?
Ask her. Okay. I'm only the eater, not the cooker.
I have to tell you, I'm going to share a little personal information right now. I'm doing this intermittent fasting right now, where you only eat between noon and six every day, 15 grams of net carbs a day or less, and 2,000 calories or less a day, because my doctor basically said you're fat and you need to lose weight. So I've been working on that, and actually with some success, I will say. But something about wild game, the beauty of wild game is that you can tailor it to nearly every recipe, and you can tailor it to a very healthy balance in your diet. The meats we're talking about, all the meats that are harvested, are very lean proteins, and they're extremely versatile. So you hunted with your dad quite a bit, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How did you guys cook your duck growing up when you were a young kid? And is it different then than it is now?
At some point, we realized that there was bacon in the world, and it changed everything. We did a lot of diver hunting. And, you know, I don't care what anybody says. I mean, divers are fun to shoot. But that's pretty much where it stops for me. My grandpa loved bluebills, redheads, and canvasbacks. And I said, hey, great.
You can eat them.
You can
great,
eat them.
You can eat them.
Yep.
Well, everybody criticizes divers for tasting like fish, or tasting fishy, I should say. They eat fish. Of course they're going to taste fishy.
Yeah.
But we have no problem going to a seafood restaurant and ordering fish, which tastes like fish.
I love walleyes. Perch. They're great.
Okay. Well, on the divers, I'm going to give you a little secret here with the divers. The three things that break down the gamey taste of meat, or the fishy taste of meat in ducks, are acids, because the taste is in the enzymes and it's in the base of the meat. So acids break down bases. So acids, heat over time, which is the crock pot, the Traeger, the instant pot, and physically breaking it down. So physically grinding takes that away. So when you've got your diver ducks and you want to eat them, don't be afraid to put them on the Traeger or in the crock pot, fill it with water, add an acid to it, wine vinegar, lemon juice, lime juice. That acid over time will take all of that taste out. And I have had people sit and eat diver ducks and tell me it was the best shredded beef they've ever had. And I said, well, you're eating a bufflehead. And they don't even believe it. I'm telling you, it's delicious. Kakich, you're shaking your head as you're not a believer. But I made you a believer with goose. I would make you a believer. I'd make you a merganser believer.
Not happening. I can smell a merganser a mile away.
I'm going to sneak it into your burrito one of these days, and then you're going to say, holy cow, he was telling me the truth. Let's change topics now. I don't know if we should do this now or the next segment, but I'm going to do it now. I brought some jargon calls in with me, and I have to be honest. These calls arrived at my house today, and I'm really excited about them because jargon's got some new duck, a new duck call called the Megaphore. And I want you to talk. For a person like me who's hunted for a while, I'm still not a great duck caller. I'm not a great goose caller. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'd put myself at a 3 or a 4. What are some things, and a lot of times one of the animosities people have or one of the things they're worried about getting into hunting is actually knowing how to blow a call. So talk to me for a minute about the importance of the call, and then why don't you give us a couple quick tips on some easy calls, and let's hear you practice one of them on the Megaphore.
I think the easiest tip that I can tell anybody, I think anybody that is adequate on a duck or a goose call will tell anybody that's still in the beginning learning stages, is you have to make a concerted effort to be good at blowing a duck or a goose call. The difference of 1980 whatever and today is the internet. There are so many opportunities to view instructional tutorials or watching somebody teach you how to use that duck or goose call that it makes the learning curve so slight. It is so much better and easier to learn how to blow a duck or a goose call. And I think if I was to tell one tip to any duck or goose caller, it's know when not to call. It's not knowing when to call, it's knowing when not to call. And I think that's the hardest thing for people to learn, is knowing how to read the birds. And once they can figure that out, and it comes after practice and years and trips in the field.
What is the key to reading birds?
Spending time. And you know, that's the good thing about Wisconsin, it's 12 months. You have to find a way to make duck hunting or goose hunting last 12 months. You know, for me, for a long time, it was blowing a duck and a goose call, 12 months. And, you know, my mom and dad would probably be able to tell you it was pretty painful for them. And, you know, my wife will tell you that I spend some time in a garage. But I think that concerted effort, you know, just practice.
Like I said, I'm not great at it, and I always tell people the first two rules of duck hunting are that, number one, they don't come to calls, and number two, they never commit. And you told me one day, you said, you know, the best duck call is the one that's left in the car. So I don't want to tell, look, you can be a great hunter by setting up a great spread. First of all, scouting. You have a decent place to hunt, a well-scouted place with a decent spread. You have a very good chance of harvesting ducks. But the duck and goose call have become the artistic component of waterfowl hunting. And the artistic component to the point that now, you know, and some of the young kids who start, girls, boys, men, women, they're becoming fantastic at it, where they blow me away in the field. So I like to help out or add the groans, you know, when the geese are coming in. But why don't you grab the call and give us some of the basic calls and tell us how you're doing them.
Didn't work. The first thing is you have to find the breaking point of the call, because some people will blow hard, some people will blow too soft. So you got to find out where that breaking point is in the call.
And what are you saying in your mouth when you make that call? That's a basic quack.
Yep. So everybody's got to start with the basic quack, and you know, everybody says grunt into the call. Well, it's more the air's coming up from your diaphragm, and it's how you're pushing that air into the call. You don't necessarily puff your cheeks out like you do maybe with a goose call, but with a duck call, you have to forcibly push that air into the call and have a little bit of back pressure on the exit of the air.
So when you say your diaphragm, I mean, let's simplify it for somebody who's never blown a call. You say you're using your diaphragm. When you take a deep breath, you're taking that deep breath into your stomach region and not into your lungs, correct?
Yes.
So I think that's actually the first thing I would tell people. And, you know, growing up in music and being in music and singing, you learn to breathe from your diaphragm. So the diaphragm is a muscle on the outside of your stomach, mm-hmm. below your rib cage. So when you're breathing into your diaphragm, you're not going to see your shoulders raising and falling. You're going to see your stomach expanding and contracting. And that's where the air comes from when you're blowing a call. So what are you saying into the call when, for someone who's never done it before?
So you have to find a word that fits in your vocabulary. For a lot of people, that when I teach somebody how to blow a duck call, we usually use the word hoot or what, and you can use what for ducks and geese, but hoot is a pretty easy one, because it's how your lips, your throat and your tongue is very important when you blow a duck and a goose call as well.
So you're pushing the diaphragm, the air from the diaphragm up through your mouth, and you're saying hoot into the call. Mm-hmm. And so give us a run of just that very simple basic call.
So on that note, when I teach somebody, I always try to have them start with using the back end of the call so they can hear what's happening as they push the air into the call. Because when you teach somebody, a lot of the first couple times it sounds like a whistle. Shh, shh. Where you just get air coming through the call. Well, that's not going to give you really any, you know, a good tone coming out of the call. So by having them then practice bringing that air up and squeezing with their throat and tongue, you don't necessarily grunt into the call. You can do that with just controlling the air coming up from your diaphragm and using your throat and your tongue to pinch that air. And then when you bring the call around to the front, you can pinch it off and get a little bit squeakier of a call, like at the end there, or you can open it up and get more raspy. So you do that with your tongue and your throat as you're bringing that air up from your diaphragm.
It is really fun to watch you do that, because as you make those simple calls, that sounds incredibly like a hen mallard as she's flying over the top. I want to talk real quick about wood ducks. Wood ducks are like this controversial duck. I love hunting wood ducks. They're, in my opinion, the most beautiful duck that exists in North America. I mean, they're glorious and they're delicious to eat, beautiful to mount. And they are a duck that you can target and have usually success early in the season on until they hightail it after a couple of freezes. But there is a controversy out there as to whether wood ducks respond to calls. Do they?
So in the beginning of a season, you know, everybody says ducks are dumb and they'll respond to the call. Well, I don't know, maybe for the first day or two, you know, they'll respond to the call. But wood ducks, it's kind of where you're hunting. The more pressure, the less they'll respond to the call. And I hunted with a gentleman, he's probably 80 now, and he will not shoot a wood duck unless it's on the water. And I asked him, I said, Bob, why are you doing that? He said, because I don't want to waste any of the meat. And we just listened to those ducks swimming on the water, and they just peep. That's it. Yeah. So if you're hunting wood ducks, all you got to do is peep.
Take us to the break with the wood duck call. And it's still out there. Do they work or not? Yeah, that does sound like them. And that's what they do. Whether they come into it or not, who knows? We're going to talk about the Wisconsin Waterfowl Expo as soon as we come back from the break with Mark Kakich, state champion goose caller, duck caller, good friend of mine and hunting buddy. We'll be right back on Raised in the Shaw with me, Joel Clayfish, on 101 FM WAUK 540 AM, The Shaw.